Thank you so much, Rabbi Glasser, for those two kind words. And it is a tremendous honor to be able to be here this morning, a few weeks before Purim, and to be able to show honor to the memory of a great Torah scholar. And one of the topics we thought we would try to explore, combining those two themes for the morning, is a topic that's central to Purim, but also shows the tremendous influence that one Talmud Chacham, the one Torah scholar, can have. Because I thought we would look at a topic that relates to the laws of Purim, but is uniquely affected by the efforts of one Torah scholar, one Talmud Chacham, who had an opinion on a matter, and it dictated the path of the conversation for the next 200 years and counting. And I thought it's a very interesting exercise in just how halacha is addressed and how psak is addressed, and in that sense would perhaps serve as a reflection of what Talmidei Chachamim accomplished with their influence and their perspectives. And the topic is a cheerful one. It's the topic of Shalach Manos. We know that there are four primary obligations that we have on Purim, and one of the four is to pick up the water and to send it as a gift to someone together with some food, together in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. The Megillah says, Mishloch Manos Ish L'Re'ehu, that there is an obligation on Purim to send gifts to a friend. And there was a statement regarding this mitzvah, this obligation of Purim. There was a statement made by the Ramah, the great codifier of Jewish law, the one who wrote the glosses on the Shulchan Aruch, reflecting Ashkenazi position. The Ramah had a statement which became the topic of great controversy. You wouldn't expect it was possible it could be such a controversy, a detail in Hilchos Purim. Nonetheless, that was the case. The Ramah had a ruling which, for hundreds of years, was the topic of argument. Here, the Megillah tells us that we have to give gifts on Purim, gifts of food to our friends. So the Ramah, you can take a look, I think it's in the sources. Source number one, the Ramah has a statement which not everyone agreed with. So it's about three lines from the bottom in this first source. Says the Ramah, v'im sholeach manos l'reyehu. Let's say somebody sent gifts of food to a friend. V'hu eino rotzu l'kablam. And that friend is not interested in taking it. Omochalo, or he says, listen, it's nice that you want to send me this gift, but hundreds of people have been here already today. I can barely open my door. I don't need any more. I'm mochal. Yotza, the person who offered the shlach manos, is yotze, is in fulfillment. And that was controversial, because later commentary said, how do you know? Are you telling me it's the thought that counts? Are you telling me that I don't actually have to give a gift on Purim? I just have to offer it. And if the person who I offer it to says, listen, it's fine, I have enough, stay home, stay with your family, you don't have to get in your car and drive the Shalach Manos over, that's enough? That's all that it requires? How do you know? My Megillah says, Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'ehu, to send the gifts. It doesn't say to offer gifts. So why would you think that I'm in fulfillment of my obligation if all I did was offer, I didn't actually send? So this was a topic of debate for hundreds of years. Different authorities trying to assess whether the position was correct or not, until it reached the desk of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, who died in the first part of the 19th century, hundreds of years later, the Chassam Sofer decided to take up this topic, is the Ramah correct? And in his analysis, he brought an approach to this topic which influenced pretty much every discussion of Shalach Manos for the next 200 years and counting. And said the Chassam Sofer, well, if you want to know, is it enough? Is it the thought that counts when it comes to Shalach Manos? Is it enough to offer and to not actually get it there? We have to figure out what's the point of Shalach Manos. What is Shalach Manos supposed to accomplish? Why did Chazal ordain this commandment? And he said, I'll do a little research. Let me try to figure it out. And he dug up two earlier sources that had two different perspectives on what the mitzvah was supposed to accomplish. And said the Chassam Sofer, he thinks it all hinges on this question. That on the one hand, there was the Trumas Adeshen. The Trumas Adeshen, one of the German Rishonim, I think the Tshuva is quoted here. It's source 5. the Trumas Hadeshen was of the opinion that the mitzvah of Shalach Manos is there to help with another mitzvah, one of the other obligations of Purim. We know that we have an obligation to have a su'udah on Purim. We're supposed to have a festive meal. And not everyone has the wherewithal, has the resources to have such a meal. So therefore, Chazal ordained that we should send gifts of food to each other to make sure that everyone would have enough to eat on Purim. So that's the purpose of Shalach Manos. In contrast, there was the view of the Manos HaLevi. The Manos HaLevi was written by Rav Shlomo Alkebetz. And this line in his Sefer, Manos HaLevi, is the second most famous thing he ever wrote. It's a far, far second, but it's the second most famous. It's a very widely quoted line. But the most famous thing he ever wrote was L'cha Dodi. So the author of the L'cha Dodi also wrote a commentary on Megillas Esther. And from that commentary, this is the most widely quoted line. So says the author of the L'cha Dodi, that the reason Chazal instituted the mitzvah of Shalach Manos is because of another sentiment that we see expressed in the Megillah. That here Haman says about the Jewish people, he says to Achashverosh, Yeshno am echad mefuzarim mefurat, there is one nation among you that is scattered and that is dispersed and it's not worth keeping them around and the king should kill them. So says the Manos HaLevi, we want to correct that attitude of Haman. That here Haman said, we are scattered and dispersed, so we want to bring people together. So how do you bring people together? So the fastest way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So if you send gifts of food, if you send these little tokens around from person to person, so that will bring people together, that will be marbe, chiba v'reis, that will increase friendship among people, that'll do it. Therefore, Chazal, in order to make sure that people would indeed come together, so therefore they ordained this mitzvah of Shalach Manos. So said the Chasam Sofer, there you have it, two attitudes, two distinct approaches to why we have Shalach Manos. We have the Trumas Hadeshen, who tells us it's there to help with the meal. And we have the Manos HaLevi, Rav Shlomo Alkebetz, who understood that it's there in order to help relationships, in order to make friends, and therefore that's the purpose. So the Chasam Sofer assumed the question of, is the Ramah correct? When the Ramah says it's the thought that counts, is he correct? Well, it depends. If one assumes, like the Manos HaLevi, that this is all meant to be expressions of friendship, gestures of bonding to create greater unity among the Jewish people, then maybe yes, it is the thought that counts. So if you offer, and the individual says, listen, it's okay, I have way enough, please stay home and enjoy the day with your family, okay, you've accomplished what you need to accomplish. But if it's for the purpose of helping with the Suda, like the Trumas Hadeshen assumes the Chasam Sofer, says then it's not going to help. Because he assumes that if it's a tzedakah related idea, that if the idea is that you're trying to help people who don't have enough for their Suda, so then we can't allow mechila to work. We can't allow that it's going to be effective even if the recipient says, it's okay, keep it, I don't need it. Why not? Because all the recipients are going to say, I don't need it. No one's going to want to admit that I'm the one who could use some help this Purim. No one's going to say, yes, I actually do need to receive it. So everyone will feel pressured to just say, it's okay, keep it, I'm fine. And besides that, you could get out of the whole thing by just calling up your rich friends and say, listen, do you need it? They'll say no, and you could stay home, and those who actually need it are never going to get anything. So the Chasam Sofer assumed that if that's the purpose is to help with the meal, so then it doesn't make sense that mechila should be allowed. It's going to have to actually reach its target, otherwise it can't be effective, and that's how he understood the two positions. So this was an innovative statement. Here the Chasam Sofer was giving a groundbreaking approach to this topic of Shalach Manos, and he taught the world that these are the two focal positions, that either it's there for the Suda, or it's there to make friendship, and that will affect the discussion. That's going to dictate how we're going to apply the principles of Shalach Manas. And this had enormous influence. So ever since the Chassam Sofer wrote his tshuva, so just about every discussion over these past few centuries that has anything to do with Shalach Manas has built upon the Chassam Sofer, has drawn upon the Chassam Sofer. So for example, if you were to ask the rabbi, when I send my Shalach Manas, should I do it in a blue basket or a red basket? So he has to first say, well, the Chassam Sofer has his tshuva about this, and a red basket looks better on the table, so if it's about the Suda, it should be a red basket, and a blue basket is more cheerful, so if it's about making friends, it should be a blue. Somehow, this question affects every issue in Shalach Manas, and it's had a tremendous influence. And the Chassam Sofer himself took it further along this path by adding one other issue. In his tshuva, the tshuva is Siman Kuf Tzadi Hei, by the way, I don't remember if I put it on the list, but in the tshuva he adds one more case which he thinks would be affected by this. He says, let's say you are not the primary breadwinner of the household. Let's say you don't pay for your own meals. Are you obligated in the mitzvah of Shalach Manos? Is Shalach Manos just someone who is supplying his own meals, has to therefore pay for the meals of others? Or does it apply to everyone? Every adult member of the household has a mitzvah in Shalach Manos. And he assumes also that that should also depend, that if one is there to help other people with the Suda, so then it makes sense that only people who are paying for their own meals have to help out with paying for other people's meals. But if it's about making friends, so then that happens at all levels and at all points. So therefore, everyone should have a personal obligation of Shalach Manos, men and women, adults and children over the age of 13. And that was the way he understood it as well. So he continued along this path saying, so many different questions will be affected by this issue. And it was a tremendously influential tshuva. There was one detail in halacha about this that I thought really should be independent of this question, that shouldn't be affected. And it's a whole discussion that the Achronim have. This one really started with the Binyan Siyam. The Binyan Siyam was Rabbi Yaakov Ellinger, who was one of the Rebbeim of Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. And he had a tshuva where he started a discussion, which also is one that's still going nowadays, the question of, when we do the mitzvah of Shalach Manos, does it have to be done through a shliach? Does it have to be done through an emissary? Can you give the gift yourself? Or are you supposed to specifically get someone else to deliver it for you? It's based on a specific attention to a language in one of the Rishonim, the Ran's commentary to Megillah, and it was a whole discussion. Nobody actually really concludes that it's actually a requirement. The Binyan Siyam also doesn't necessarily think it's actually a requirement in his conclusion, but it's a whole discussion back and forth. Is this essentially what the Megillah is telling us? Mishloach manos yishrayehu, that you shouldn't just give a gift, but you should actually send it. It would seem like it shouldn't matter, according to our two opinions here. This should be one issue that is independent, that if the purpose is to help with the Suda, so then it would seem they're going to be helped with the Suda whether you give it directly or you give it through someone else. And if the issue is to make friends, so then the gift will be helpful and will be pleasant whether you do it through yourself or through someone else. It shouldn't seem to matter. However, eventually saw that actually the Satmar Rav has a tshuva, and his tshuva is Divrei Yoel, where he thinks this also depends. This is also affected by the Chassam Sofer's tshuva. Because he writes that if the purpose is to help with the meal, to help with the Suda, you're right, it doesn't matter. You give it yourself, you give it through someone else, it gets there, it's fine. But if the purpose is to make friends, it might matter. Why? Because he says, imagine two scenarios, and here we're going to have to make it a little more colorful than he actually writes it, but you can imagine if you paint it in extremes, two scenarios. Let's say I'm walking around Purim morning, and I'm giving Shalach Manas to some of my friends, and I happen to run into Shmerel in the street, and Shmerel sees me with a number of packages in my hands, and he says, oh, you have Shalach Manas for me? It's so nice of you. I'm really delivering to other people. I just happened to run into him in the street. I said, oh, yeah, sure, of course. Here you go. And then I quickly run into my house to make up the one I gave to him so I can give it to my real friends. So that accomplishes something. It doesn't accomplish that much. But let's assume that next year, my real friend Beryl, so he moves for the year to Alaska. And he's out in the middle of nowhere in Alaska. And all of a sudden, Purim morning, the sled dogs come to his house, they come to his igloo, and they knock on the door, and they knock on the ice Purim morning, And a package for me in Teaneck, New Jersey, who thought about him and who sent it to Alaska to his igloo to wish him a happy Purim. So that's going to have a real effect. That's really going to impress him. So said the Sabbat Ravi has a proof from this based on earlier sources that sometimes when you involve a messenger, you're saying that this isn't an accident. I didn't just run into you in the street and I happen to have it, but this clearly involves forethought. I clearly am thinking about you, and this is a special gift, and therefore that's what's going to impress people. That's what's going to say, all right, here is a thought about you, and that's going to accomplish the purpose of the Manos HaLevi, of making friends, and that's going to be more significant. Maybe that's where the idea comes from. So again, many, many follow this approach, and it does seem to back up certain earlier foundations. So for example, the Rama, who started this whole conversation, the Rama, who was the one who said that it's the thought that counts, if you offer it and they don't accept it, it's fine. So that seems to be the basis of his position in other ways as well. Because the Rama also has a ruling, I'm not sure if it's here or not, that the Rama says that if one sends Shalach Manas to someone else, it's discussed a little bit in Source 11, I'll just discuss it outside, that if one sends Shalach Manas to his friend, so what if it takes a little while to get there? Right? We don't necessarily have the ability to send it and have received at the same time. So what happens if there's a time difference? So, says the Rama, that it has to be received on Purim itself. It cannot be received before Purim. Not only on Purim itself, but when it comes to Purim, unlike its partner Pesach a month later when we do the mitzvahs primarily at night, Purim is really all about the day, which is a big surprise to everyone who's drinking at night. Purim is all about the day of Purim. All the mitzvahs of Purim, even the Megillah, believe it or not, is really focused on the day. And therefore the Shalach Manas also is about the day. So says the Rama, it has to be received not before Purim, but on Purim, and not the night, but during the daytime. It has to be received during the daytime of Purim. So why is that? So if one says, like the Trumas HaDeshen, that we're trying to help with the meal, okay, so we understand if I send it a month before, it's not going to be around anymore when it comes time for the meal on Purim. But if I send it the day before, if I send it the night before, so then they can use it for their Suda, it should be fine. That should be effective. But we see that the Rama's opinion is that it's not really there about the meal. It's there to make friends. So if it's a point of making friends, of creating bonds, so yes, that's valuable all year round, but we understand the mitzvah is to make friends on Purim, is to increase unity on Purim itself. So when does that happen? That happens during the oh how nice moment, that when they receive the gift and they say, oh how nice. Oh, okay, he sent me something. That's so thoughtful. That's so nice. That's when the mitzvah is fulfilled. If it's about the meal, okay, you can be there the day before, they'll have it for lunch the next day. But if it's about making friends, we're focused not on being able to hold on to the food till the right moment, but we're focused on the oh how nice moment, and therefore that has to be on Purim itself. Now, it would seem that everyone should agree, the Trumas HaDeshen should agree also, that okay, maybe it can come early, but it can't come late. It can't come after Purim. However, there was one exception. It was the great Talmud Chacham named the Kadjugal of Rav, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin until the war. Probably, probably Hirschsprung probably knew him. He was a great contemporaneous Talmud Chacham. And he was always Malamed Tzchus on the Jewish people. He always had a way to explain. He was a very creative thinker. And he always had a way to explain why whatever the Jews are doing, it makes sense. There's a reason for it. So he discussed the question of, why is it that we find people on Purim running around bringing Shalach Manas, and they have a long list, so they're still doing it late Purim afternoon, very late Purim afternoon, very, very late Purim afternoon, after it's already dark Purim afternoon, after it's already Shushan Purim, they're still bringing. So what do they accomplish? If Purim is over already, once it's already dark, what do they accomplish by bringing Shalach Manas after it's no longer Purim? Seems to be, okay, it's a nice thing to bring a gift, but it's no longer Purim related. So said the Kadjugal of Rav, he thinks maybe there's a way to explain it. That if we use the position of the Trumas HaDeshen here, if we use the position that it's there to help with the Suda, so then there is a position that the Jewish people have maintained, which seems to be correct, that when it comes to Purim, The main thing is we start our Suda on Purim, but I'm sure many of us have the experience that our Purim Suda continues until after dark. The Purim Suda starts when it's still daytime, but even after it's technically no longer Purim, if we have started our Suda during the daytime on Purim, we consider that all to be a fulfillment of Sudas Purim, and that seems to be a fair assumption. So therefore, said the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's theoretically possible that even after Purim is over, people are still involved in their Purim Suda. So therefore, if it's possible to still bring something that will help for the Suda, then it could still be a fulfillment of Shalach Manos, even though Purim may technically be over at that time, maybe that's still possible. So again, an analysis that builds itself on this idea that there are these two positions within Shalach Manos, and they inform everything that we talk about. And we find this happens even when it yields opposite approaches. So for example, many of the tshuvas bring up the question of whether you can give Shalach Manos to a child. The child is not obligated in mitzvos. Does one fulfill the obligation of Shalach Manos by giving to a child? So some assume yes. Well, it clearly depends on the Monos Halevi and the Trumas Hadesha, that if the obligation is to help with the Suda, so the child is not obligated in the Suda, there's no point. But if it's to make bonds of friendship, so we're all the Jewish people, we're all friends, it doesn't matter whether obligated in mitzvahs or not. But others say the same calculation the opposite way. They say, well, clearly it depends on the Manos Halevi and the Trumas Hadesha. So if it's about creating friends, you have to be the same age group. You have to have that type of bond for it to even start in the first place. So it's only sharing in the same type of age level. But if the idea is to help with the Suda, the whole family has the Suda, it's not really just about those who are obligated in mitzvos, so then perhaps it has an impact also. So again, the starting assumption is somehow the Manos Halevi and the Trumas Hadesha are a part of the conversation, even when it yields opposite results. There was another issue that was also assumed to be associated, that was also assumed to be connected with this question, and this was discussed by many poskim, including one who certainly should follow in the path of the Chassam Sofer, and that was his son, the Tshuva's Chassam Sofer, Rav Avram Shmuel Binyamin Sofer, has a Tshuva where he considers a question which unfortunately we wouldn't recommend this today. In today's climate, this is probably not a good idea. But let's say somebody wanted to send Shalach Manos anonymously. So again, I wouldn't recommend nowadays leaving an unmarked box outside somebody's house, but maybe in simpler times it was a possibility. So let's say you want to send Shalach Manos without any kind of identification. So many discuss this, including the Ksav Sofer, and they assume as well that it probably ties in opposite ways, because if the point is to help with the Suda, if it's a type of tzedakah, if it's there to assist those who need, so then we know when it comes to tzedakah, the Rambam has his different levels of tzedakah, and to give anonymously is a higher level. It's better to give tzedakah anonymously than to take credit for it. So if that's the purpose, okay, so then it makes sense. Maybe it's a good idea. But if the point is to create bonds of friendship, they're not going to know who to have friendship with. They're not going to know who to feel the connection to. So then it's not going to accomplish anything. Now you might say, well, maybe it'll accomplish even more because they'll have general warm feelings about the whole Jewish people, whoever it is. I could hear that svara, but they assume that we have to have some type of focus for your positive attention. We have to know who it is who brought this gift. And therefore, that's something that is significant. That's something that should be highlighted. So again, here this perspective is brought in to yet another question. There was a statement one of the Rishonim had. Rishonim came before this whole discussion, but it seems to be that it's relevant to this discussion. The Ritva, in his commentary to Megillah on Daf Zayin, the Ritva has a comment which the later poskim quoted. It's a whole discussion, what exactly is the shear? What's the minimum to accomplish Shalach Manos? How much do I have to give? So we're familiar, we learn in school, Shtei Manos, two gifts, to one person, Ish L'Reyehu, but how much is considered to be a gift? So how do we define a gift? So the Ritva writes that it has to be worth something, it has to be a Shava Pruta, it has to have some value. Others later, Achronim, understood maybe it should be a kezias, maybe it's defined by a food measurement. But in any event, the Ritva writes it has to at least have some significant value. And he said it's also subjective a little bit. That yes, it could be a Shava Pruta, it could be a token amount. But let's say you get a small gift, and the person who gave it is incredibly wealthy. your billionaire friend sends you a little package of pretzels and a Diet Pepsi. So, okay, it's going to help, but he says that's not going to count. Davar katan me'ashir, if you get a small gift from a wealthy person, he says that's not going to do it. And also inversely, me'ashir, if you give to a wealthy person such a gift, but it's not going to even register in his attention, he's not going to notice it, also it's no good. And the assumption is that here the Ritva again came first, but that this is in sync with the view of the Manos HaLevi, that if it was there to help with the meal, it's okay, every little bit counts. But if it's there to create bonds of friendship, so then it's going to make a difference if it's going to be noticed or not. So if a very wealthy person gives something very small, so then the recipient might say, this is just not significant coming from that person, I'm not going to really feel this is such a gift. And inversely also, the wealthy person who gets such a gift is not going to notice it, it's not going to register, so then you're not going to accomplish too much. Building off this idea that it has to have some sense of impressing the recipient, that it has to have some type of an effect, some of the later Achronim took this in other cases as well. For example, there was another question that also seems to go in opposite directions depending on which view is dominant here. So we know that sometimes this is also not really something that's relevant nowadays, but once upon a time, the Jewish community had a very organized communal structure, and we could compel people to do things. We could order people to comply with Jewish practice. It's called kfiyah. We could compel people to do certain responsibilities. So the question came up, are we kofin al shalach manas? Do we compel people to fulfill the mitzvah of shalach manas? This was discussed by Rav Yaakov Batzal Zsolti, who was the chief rabbi of Jerusalem. He passed away about 40 years ago, to say from Mishnas Yavetz. So he discusses this question, and he notes that if it's a tzedakah obligation, if this is a charitable obligation, that's where we find kofin. We find sometimes, communally, we do compel people to fulfill their charitable obligations. So if shalach manas is about helping people with the meal, so then maybe the community does compel. But if it's like the Manos HaLevi, it's there to make friends, so then you can imagine it's not going to be so impressive when you show up at your neighbor's house with two U.S. Marshals who are there standing on your side, and you say, hi, I was forced to give you this, I hope you like it. It's not really going to impress people too much. That's not necessarily going to have such an effect, and maybe that's also not really going to be impressive as far as Shalach Manas is concerned. Or similarly, there is an increasingly popular approach, we do this in my own shul, where we have everyone get together and send a joint shalach manas. But the question is that a personal fulfillment of the mitzvah, or is that something extra that the community does? When you have this joint shalach manas, it's a nice thing to do, but is that a fulfillment of the mitzvah, the personal obligation of shalach manas? So there also, poskim have used this metric to consider what exactly is the purpose. Are we trying to help out with the suda? Is this going to really make an effect? Is this going to have any kind of a difference? Or is the purpose that we are trying to create communal unity? And this, depending on how you understand it, either does help or doesn't help as much. It's all a little bit subjective, but that becomes a part of the discussion as well. It's interesting also, if those who are going to Israel for Purim, or if you live in Yerushalayim, so you're more familiar with the idea that Purim happens on different days than it does for others. Purim is observed either on the 14th or the 15th, depending on where you live. And there is the possibility in Yerushalayim, which doesn't apply here, of Purim falling out on Shabbos. If Purim falls out, the 15th of Adar could fall out on Shabbos. On our calendars, the 14th never does. So when the 15th falls out on Shabbos, there is a big discussion, also ongoing, subject to a lot of details, about how the mitzvos of Purim should be fulfilled. What can be done on Shabbos? What cannot be done on Shabbos? How exactly do the mitzvos play out? And it seems to be that they spread themselves over a three-day period, and that's what's known as Purim Meshulash, the triple Purim. We need 3 days to get all the mitzvos done, because the Megillah is not read on Purim, it's pushed off. Other mitzvos maybe are done on Shabbos. So there is a big discussion back and forth what mitzvah gets assigned to what day. So it seems to be agreed, especially on the Rambam and others, that wherever Shalach Manas goes, it follows the Suda. That Shalach Manas is supposed to be correlated to when the Suda is. So some understand that this is a reflection of the Shumas Hadeshin's position, that it's there to help with the Suda. While others have an additional angle here. This is something that Rav Schechter has noted, a few others have noted as well, that maybe it reflects a third understanding. That maybe the idea of Shalach Manos is that we're supposed to include everyone else in our Suda. So we have our Suda at home. And then we send little gifts of food to other people's houses also. So it's as if we're all part of one big Suda. So that kind of combines the ideas in an interesting way that essentially we are helping people with their Suda, but we're also doing it in a way that creates this communal unity. And therefore, in a sense, it has a little bit of both concepts associated with it. There is also a discussion where it's brought up, why is it that the practice is, there are some sources here that talk about that we do not make a bracha on Shalach Manas. So how come we make a bracha on other mitzvos, we don't make a bracha on Shalach Manas? So there are various theories. Among them, the Das Sofer, who was again a descendant of the Chassam Sofer, following in this path. So he discusses that maybe it has to do with the Trumas Hadeshin's approach, the idea that it's there to help with the Suda. And here, this is an interesting point that he raises, that if we assume that the purpose of Shalach Manas is to help with the meal, so essentially it means that out of the four mitzvos on Purim, half of them, two of them, are really tztaka-oriented. Because we have Matanos Flavionim, which is certainly overtly tztaka-oriented. And we have Shalach Manos, which is a different level, which is also meant to help people who are in need, but less obviously so. It's not as direct and explicit as Matanos Le'Avyonim. And therefore, it helps on a different level. It helps people in a less obvious way. It allows for it to be a little more subtle. But essentially, it's a partner mitzvah, as the Pasuk suggests, together with Matanos Le'Avyonim. So essentially, what he seems to be saying is that really, these are the same idea. They're two iterations of the same mitzvah, Matanos Levyonim and Mishloach Manos. And if we were to make a bracha, we'd have to call attention to which one it is and which one it isn't. So that's not what we want to do. So therefore, the whole text of the bracha is not really applicable. We leave the whole thing out because the whole purpose of Shalach Manos is it's supposed to be a more subtle version, something less explicit than Matanos Levyonim. Meanwhile, the Sridi Eish, more recently the Sridi Eish in his Chuvos, has a discussion about this as well, and he says something similar to what we said a few minutes ago, that perhaps the idea is that if we want to make friends, so similar to what we said a few minutes ago about being compelled, it's also going to seem a little bit funny if you come to your friend's house and you say, listen, I have a gift for you, but hold on, before I give you this gift, I have to say something. Blessed are you, God, who ordered me and forced me and commanded me to give this gift. So it's not going to necessarily have the same effect. So therefore, maybe again, that's a reason why for Shalach Manos, we don't have a bracha. It's not going to necessarily be consistent with the purpose. There is another fascinating discussion that comes up. A few other fascinating, trying to think how much we have time for. For example, there is a discussion, source number 7 tells us that there were two brothers, the Baravin brothers, Bayi Baravin, Rav Chanina Baravin, and they were Machalfi Sudosahu. They would trade their meals. They would trade their food with each other. And the Ran explains, this is source 9, that they didn't have enough food for their own possessions, so they weren't able to both fulfill the mitzvah of Suda and also to send food to other people. They couldn't do both. They had to do one or the other because they only had very limited amounts of food. So therefore, what they would do is they would trade their food with each other. So one would give all of his food to the other, and the other would give all his food to the first. That's how the Ran understands it. You see Rashi over here understands it a little differently. And in that way, they would fulfill both. They would fulfill the Suda, and they would fulfill Shalach Manos. So some point out that you see that this really is more Manos Halevi oriented, that as far as the Trumas Hadash is concerned, you're not really increasing the amount of available food, but in terms of at least creating this sense of brotherhood between these two brothers, so that was something that was accomplished, and therefore perhaps that's what they were doing, and they fulfilled the mitzvah of Shalach Manos that way. There is a fascinating discussion which there were those who thought it was all a Purim Torah discussion. The Tshuva's Mishpatef El Yaakov, he writes that the following issue, he can't believe it's a real question. He thinks it's for sure not true. It's got to be Purim Torah, but many great poskim did discuss this issue. Can you fulfill Shalach Manos with Divrei Torah? What if instead of sending gifts of food, you send Divrei Torah around? So what's the basis of the discussion? Where does that even get off the ground? So hold on, we'll explain. So it could be, there are those who would connect this, that there is an idea that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Shalosh Shudas with Divrei Torah, that if you're not able to eat a third meal on Shabbos, either because you're too full, or this comes up on Erev Pesach, Shechalios B'Shabbos, when it's very challenging to figure out how to get a bread-oriented meal into the day at that point. So there's a comment in the Zohar that the post can invoke, that maybe it's possible to have Divrei Torah to be considered as somewhat of a fulfillment of eating, that somehow it's like a meal. So theoretically, one could bring that into the conversation also. One could say that if Divrei Torah could be considered like a meal, so then maybe if I have this notion of sending food around, so maybe I could send Divrei Torah around also, maybe that should be a fulfillment as well. So it could be basing it on that Zohar, or you could also be basing it on the Manos Halevi, that you could say that if the purpose is to make friends, so what greater bonding experience is there than sharing Divrei Torah? So maybe that should also accomplish this. If you'll send around Divrei Torah, so that should also be a fulfillment of the purpose of Shalach Manos. So it seems to correlate that, setting aside the Zohar for a moment, if that's safe to do, setting aside that, if one assumes that the purpose is the meals, okay, it seems less likely that Divrei Torah are going to help with the meal. But we always tell our kids that's a crucial part of the meal, so maybe it should help with the meal. But in addition, if one focuses on the idea of making friends, okay, there's more room to say that maybe this accomplishes something, that sending around Divrei Torah could perhaps be a fulfillment. So it's interesting, because the way it's going to line up based on what we've said so far is that the opinion that maybe Divrei Torah should work would line up with the view of the Manos Halevi, of Rav Shlomo Alkibetz, and of the Rama. So it happens to be the case historically that both of them did this in their lives. That the Sefer Manos Halevi that we mentioned, the Sefer Shlomo Alkibetz that he wrote on the Megillah, he gave out to his friends as Shalach Manos. And the Rama did this as well. The Rama wrote a Sefer called Mechir Yayin, which is a very esoteric commentary on Megillah Esther. It's really way beyond anything that you're used to. That you see, he has a Sefer where he darshans every single word of the Megillah. So Vayhi, what does Vayhi mean? Bimei, what does Bimei mean? Achashverosh, he darshans every word of the Megillah. And the story has it that he also gave this out as Shalach Manos. This was something that the Rama gave out as a gift to people, in order to fulfill the spirit of Shalach Manos. It used to be that it was hard to get a hold of the Sefer Mechir Yayin. I remember when I finally found the copy, it was an accomplishment. Nowadays we have wonderful resources such as HebrewBooks.org, where everything is online. So if you go on to HebrewBooks.org, I think you can find several editions of the Mechir Yayin. Once upon a time it was a hard thing to find. Now if you want to look it up and you want to find out what all these words mean, so you can read the Mechir Yayin. So this was something also that he apparently did in fulfillment of the spirit of Purim. So it actually correlates that here both Manos Halevi and the Rama assumed that this was in fulfillment, at least on several. I'm sure they sent out gifts of food also, but that this was somehow a fulfillment of the goal of Shalach Manos, and that reflects itself in this practice also. It's also interesting that this is something, again, which has influenced so many discussions. You can find this in so many places. Every discussion of Shalach Manos, it affects very much the questions of Avelus in Shalach Manos. If you're considered to be sharing a meal with others, how exactly does that impact things? So many different issues in Shalach Manos have been impacted by this discussion of the Chasam Sofer and the Manos Halevi and the Trumas Hadeshen. But perhaps, most significantly, it affects the whole theme of the day. And just to make that point, I'd like to essentially close with a statement of Rabbi Nachum Zemba. Rabbi Nachum Zemba was also a great Talmud Chacham who was also lost in the Holocaust in the Warsaw Ghetto. And He was the author of tremendous ideas, only a few of which have survived the war. Some of his farm we have. But he had a notion which was quoted in one of the Sfarim of Rabbi Shlomo Warman in the Sefer Sharis Yosef. So he noted that perhaps we can find the root of these two ideas and the message, we use the title here, the message of Mishloach Manos, perhaps we can find the foundation for these ideas already in the Gemara. That if we look, I think this is on the sheet here, source 19. So the Gemara has a discussion. Shalu Talmido of Shimon ben Yochai. So Shimon ben Yochai was asked by his students, "Mipneima nischayvu sonehen shel Yisrael shabaoso hador klaya." What was the reason that sonehen shel Yisrael? We know that's a euphemism. It doesn't mean the haters of the Jewish people. It means the Jewish people themselves. What was the reason that they deserved this threat, this crisis, this episode that they went through with this looming destruction from Haman? What did they do wrong? So he said to them, Amr lahem imru atem, okay, you tell me why. So they have two suggestions here the Gemara gives. One is, Amr lahem ipnei shenenu misudaso shaloso rasha. That maybe it was because they benefited the Suda of Achashverosh. We know that's how the Megillah starts off. That was perhaps their downfall, that they were involved in this terribly inappropriate meal. And as the commentaries point out, it was not a kashrus issue. It was much worse things. The fact that they were involved in this meal of Achashverosh. So maybe that was the issue. Maybe that was the concern. So then the Gemara says that's not really going to explain it. So then they have another suggestion. Amalehem, he said to them, "Mipnei sheishtachavu letzelem." Said because they bowed down to the image, to the idol. Because Haman would walk around with an idol with a avodah zarah on his neck, and they bowed down to the idol. So therefore, they were guilty of something along the lines of idolatry, something in the broader parsha of avodah zarah, and therefore that's why they deserved such a threat. So says Rav Menachem Zemba, says here you find the roots of these two ideas, because we see that there seems to be two identified problems that brought about the whole crisis, the whole threat of Haman and Achashverosh. So the first was benefiting from this very inappropriate party, from this very inappropriate Suda, and the second was idolatry. So if the issue is that we're worried about the Suda Achashverosh, this very inappropriate party, so what's the best corrective for such a mistake? How do we offset such a problem? Not necessarily by fasting, even though we do that also before Purim, but even more effectively by showing what an appropriate Suda is, showing what the Suda Shal Mitzvah is. That's how we offset the idea of inappropriate Suda. So therefore, the Suda of Purim, this meal that we have on Purim Day, that is there to serve as the corrective for the inappropriate Suda of Achashverosh. So therefore, the Suda is there for that. And if Shalach Manos is all about supporting the Suda, so it's also a reflection of this ideal. We're all getting together here and making sure that everybody can do this mistake of the Jewish people of Shushan, and therefore that's the purpose. But what if that's not the issue? What if the issue was idolatry? So then how do we fix that? So the Medrash says in Parshas Tzav, and this is an idea that Chazal have in a number of places, this is one of them, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu declared about the Jewish people that Gadol HaShalom, that peace is tremendous, peace is a crucial value, and that's the most important thing. And the Medrash goes on to say that Bizman Shehem Bechabura Achas, when it comes to be that the Jews are all one entity, they're all one unit, they're all together, then Afilu Avdu Avodah Zarah Ani Mocha Lahem. Then even had they worshipped idolatry in the past, then I would forgive them. So how do we achieve atonement? How do we achieve forgiveness for idolatry? Through unity. And in fact, that's how some understand why we have such a crucial imperative of asking for mechila before Erev Yom Kippur. What's the connection between one and the other? Because unity and achdus among the Jewish people is a crucial step towards forgiveness. And so too, that's what the Medrash is saying here, that even for Avodah Zarah, even for such an egregious transgression, achdus is what does it. So therefore, the second theme that we find in Shalach Manos, this idea of of Laharbo Shalom Vareyas is crucial also to the message of Purim, making sure that every mistake that is in our history is rectified, is brought together on Purim, and that's very much reflected in this crucial mitzvah of Shalach Manos. And it brings up the notion that we know the Talmud ends five Masechtas this way, five of the tractates in the Talmud end with this theme that Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam, that Talmidei Chachamim have the effect that through their words and through their deeds and through their lives, they increase peace in the world. And therefore, as we are gathered here today to remember the influence of a tremendous Talmud Chacham, of a singular Torah scholar, we're reminded of this effect, of this theme of being Marbim Shalom Ba'olam, and how that is one of our goals on Purim, and how we're so grateful to see that impact, to see that continuing effect, and that's something that we should see for many years to come. So just to quickly review, I think I have a few more minutes. So we spoke about the question of where the mitzvah of Shalach Manos is targeted, and that the whole issue was prompted by a question about the Ramah, that the Ramah says you don't have to actually get the Shalach Manos to someone, it's the thought that counts. And the question is that indeed the case? It seems to say that Mishloach Manos we have to actually send, not just offer. So the Chassam Sofer, a few hundred years later, he said this seems to depend on what the reason for Shalach Manos is. Is it like the Trumas Hadeshen that is there to help with the Suda, or is it like the Manos HaLevi that is there to help make friends? Because if it's there to make friends, then indeed, yes, it's the thought that counts. But if it's there to help with the Suda, so then we can't allow people to say it's alright, don't worry, because then the people who actually need it for a number of reasons won't actually get it. And the Chassam Sofer continued applying this to other cases, because he talked also about what happens if someone doesn't supply their own meals, they're obligated to supply the meals for others. He thought that should also depend, and then he also took this and ran with it and assumed that it affects all kinds of other issues. We said at first we thought the question of shlichus, of whether you have to use someone else to send it, should not be affected by this, but we mentioned that the Sad Marav understood that maybe here also, that when you send something with someone else, it shows greater forethought and will have a greater impact as far as making friends. The Ramah himself seems to be building on this foundation when he says that it has to get there, not before Purim, but on Purim itself, because the moment of receiving the gift is when the impact happens, and therefore it has to be on Purim. But conversely, we mentioned also the Kadjar Glover, who said it could even get there after Purim, according to the Trumas Hadeshen, because it's there to help with the meal, and the meal might continue until after Purim, so you could still have a chance to help even after the meal is over. And we talked about how this affects other questions, how it's been brought into the question of can you give to a child, and how that's been understood in both ways, and the question of what if you give anonymously, that if it's for the purpose of staka, anonymous is better, but if for the purpose of making friendship connections, then anonymous is less good. And we talked also about the position of the Ritva, that it has to be of value, and it has to be also subjectively significant. If somebody is wealthy, to give them a small gift, or for them to give a small gift, is not going to register, and how that was invoked by later poskim as well, the question of can the community compel for Shalach Manos, that if the purpose is to make friends, it's not going to be too impressive, but if the purpose is charity oriented, then we do sometimes compel communal obligations towards staka. How that affects other questions, such as should you do it in partnership? Does it make sense to have everybody get together and to give Shalach Manos? And we talked about the question of making a bracha on Shalach Manos, the question of why do we not make a bracha? And we mentioned two approaches. One, the approach of the Das Sofer, also with the descendant of the Chassam Sofer, that we're trying to not call attention to the role of Shalach Manos in the sense that it's parallel in another iteration of Matanos Le'Avyonim. And the other position of the Sridei Eish, that if we're trying to make friends, it's not going to be impressive if we say we are forced to do this because of the mitzvah, and therefore we can't connect the bracha to the experience for that reason. We talked also about this Gemara, about the two brothers who would trade meals in order to fulfill Shalach Manos, and how that seems to fit more with one understanding than the other. And we talked about the question of whether you can give Divrei Torah as Shalach Manos, and how that perhaps depends on these issues, and it plays out in the sense that the Manos HaLevi and the Ramah, who would both correlate with the opinion that you could give Divrei Torah for Shalach Manos, how both of them seem to actually do that with their respective Svara, Manos HaLevi and Mechir Yayin. And then we ended off talking about this question of how the message of Purim could be contained within Shalach Manos specifically, as Rabbi Nachum Zemba explained, that the Gemara gives us these two reasons why there was a threat of Purim, why there was a threat of Haman and Achashverosh. One reason, because the Jews participated in inappropriate Suda. The second is the reason of because they were involved in something akin to idolatry. And therefore, if the idea is we're trying to fix the inappropriate appropriate suuda, so that involvement in the suuda of Purim, that's going to be a corrective to that. And if the idea is it's a problem of idolatry, the Talmud tells us that to fix idolatry or any other avera, we look towards increasing shalom, increasing unity. And of course, as we mentioned, this is one of the primary identifications of a Talmud Chacham, Marbim Shalom Ba'olam, they increase shalom in the world. As we approach Purim and the rest of the year, may this always continue to be the case. Thank you so much.